Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late night radio. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie, and tonight this morning, I'm coming to you from my little studio beneath the stairs in Old Thornhill, just north of Toronto. As I was preparing for tonight's Coast, which we'll devote almost exclusively to tales of the paranormal and the unexplained, I thought of one of John Lennon's quotes. Of course, the former Beatle would have turned 80 last week. He said, "I believe in everything until it's disproved. So I believe in fairies, the myths, dragons. It all exists, even if it's in your mind. Who's to say that dreams and nightmares aren't as real as the here and now?" I'm quite certain the former Beatle would have been an avid Coast listener. Who knows? Maybe he is. Not to put words in his mouth, but somehow, I think Jim Harold, my guest in the first half of tonight's transmission, would find no quarrel with Lennon on this point. Jim is one of my favorite storytellers. I call him the Prince of the Paranormal Podcast. He has another very popular podcast in addition to the Paranormal Podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire. And he's here to share some of his favorite campfire stories from 2020, from houses with dark and terrifying secrets to harbingers of doom, messages from beyond the grave, alien abductions, time slips, and more. In the second half, well, Friday, you know the drill, it's open lines. And obviously, there's a whole lot going on in the world right now, a dizzying array of issues demanding our attention, keeping us up at night, political, economic, social, cultural, medical, many of them disturbing. Yes, of course, there's an election coming, but we're going to leave all of that aside tonight. We can all use a break, I think, a little escape. And so for 2 hours, we're going to continue in the same vein as hours one and two, this time with your stories, your supernatural experiences, and tales of high strangeness. If Lennon were here, I think he might have called in tonight. He'd probably tell us, "There's a UFO over New York, and I ain't too surprised." Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Jim Harold is among America's most popular paranormal podcast hosts. With his free programs, The Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire, Jim has developed a loyal following over the last 15 years that spans the globe. After over a decade of working on the business side of media, Jim decided it was time to dust off his broadcast training and step back behind the mic. A lifelong interest in the paranormal, combined with his love of broadcasting and technology, have resulted in some of the most successful podcasts of their type to date. He's the author of a half dozen volumes of true ghost stories, Jim Harold's Campfire. Jim, welcome back to Coast. How are you, my friend?
It's so good to talk with you, Richard. I'm doing great. I am not, to your theme earlier, I am not the walrus, but I'm glad to be here.
And would you echo Lennon's sentiments that you believe in everything until it's disproved?
I think there's something to that, because the one thing that, you know, doing these shows for the last 15 years, it's expanded my mind and the possibilities. And I think that the world is a far more complex, and the universe is a far more complex place than we really give it credit for. So I think many of these things we talk about are very possible and plausible, and many things that we've not even conceptualized yet.
And I don't know how you work exactly. I mean, I know you're working all the time. My word, 6 volumes of Campfire,
well,
plus how many podcasts are there?
Not out yet.
Right. That one. Yes, we're going to hopefully we'll give you some stories to film volume six. But I don't know how you work. But do you record during the day? Do you record at night? How does that work?
Well, kind of all of the above. This is my full-time job. So I put out 16 to 20 episodes a month plus associated projects, books. My goodness, I mean, you know, Coast does a show every night. But I do release 16 to 20 episodes every month of various content. And then I'm getting more into video and certainly the books. So it is a full-time job, and I'm very thankful to my audience that I can do this full-time. It's really just a great blessing to take something that you have always been fascinated by. I mean, I started following the paranormal when I was a wee lad, watching Leonard Nimoy in Search Of, and loved broadcasting right. since a kid, and tech, and take all that and put it together and make a job. That's pretty cool.
I was just wondering about the time of day you record, because I'm just wondering if you record at night. Have you ever been frightened after hearing one of these stories?
You know, the funny thing is, well, I record in day and night, but Campfire, which is my spooky story show, Jim Harold's Campfire, I do about half those calls at nighttime. And yeah, sometimes I do have a funny story about that. I was interviewing someone and they were telling a story about a specter looking through their window, and it was dark and my window was open, and all of a sudden somebody came to my window and started pounding on the window. Now it turned out it was my teenage daughters, but I about jumped about 5 feet out of my chair. So sometimes it could be very terrestrial reasons for those scares. But yeah, sometimes I get a chill, like a chill down my spine with some of these stories. They're so incredible.
And do you believe in good and evil?
Oh, absolutely. As we'll see with the stories, it sounded like you got a chance to preview some of the stories I sent over. And it goes everything from angels to serial killers to kind of strange specters. I think that the, quote, paranormal is like a reflection of the normal. And I think in the world you have some very beautiful and great people doing great things. And I think, obviously, all you have to do is look at these stories of people like serial killers and things. There's some people that do some awful, awful things. I think the paranormal's like that, too. I mean, some of my New Age friends, you know, I admire them, and they have great information and insight about things. But they'll say, well, there's no such thing as evil. There's just a lower vibration. Well, Richard, I do believe there's evil, unfortunately.
So tomorrow night, I'm going to be speaking with a couple of co-authors about a book of angelic encounters, and I know that one of the stories that made your top 20 campfire stories involves an angelic encounter. This one you call The Angel That Drove a Semi. I got to hear about this one, Jim.
Yeah, The Angel Who Drove a White Semi. Well, this story was from Alan from Texas. He and his older sister, his cousin, brother-in-law, and younger brother had all gone on a road trip to support his sister. His sister was an author. And it was a two-hour road trip, and she had an event for one of her books. So they went to the event, and all was well. And they were coming back, and they heard a weird noise from the back left tire area. And they started to pull over, and they're on a freeway, and the tire explodes. And it's really catastrophic. The car flips seven times, Alan says. Alan says his ear hit the window, ripped off part of the ear off of his head. He was thrown from the car. He broke his arm, his wrist, fractured his spine, ended up being so bad he was life-flighted. When all this happened, you know, he remembers going in the air, but before he hit the ground, he passed out, didn't remember hitting it. When he woke up, he saw a man emerge from a white semi truck, an 18-wheeler, gleaming white like it was brand new. Man walked out of this semi, walked over to him. He looked like he was in his mid-40s. Al had never seen this guy in his life. And this man comes up to him, and he starts comforting him. And he says, "Don't worry about your brother." And he didn't say a thing about anybody else, and the various family members were strewn about and hurt. Alan's brother-in-law ran over to help him, and he seemed to actually run through this man like he wasn't there. And Alan asks his brother-in-law, who's this guy who just helped me? And his brother-in-law said, I don't see anyone. And Alan says there was this large white semi-truck there, parked the wrong way. No one saw the truck. The only person saw the man was his sister, who saw him for just a moment, and then he disappeared. Now, the sad thing is that Alan's brother died in this horrible, horrible accident. And he felt it was very odd that this man said, don't worry about your brother. He thinks that this man wasn't actually a man. He was probably his guardian angel. And he even thinks that it may have been his late brother coming to him in another form to comfort him. And you hear of these stories where people claim some kind of rescue from an angel. And I think it's a real thing. I think it does happen. That's that good side that we talk about. And on the campfire, we have a lot of scary, we have a lot of creepy stories. But we also have these heartwarming stories that says, yeah, there's good and evil, but there's a lot of good out there too.
How do you process something like that after you get a call like that? You can't just move on to the next interview and then start packaging a podcast, I'm guessing. I mean, that's got to affect you in a major way.
Oh, it has. Doing this show has, you know, some people have said, well, does it decrease, you know, religious faith, or does it decrease your faith? It increases my faith that there's good out there. And it does make a difference. And later on, I have another kind of angelic type story. And, you know, these people have nothing to gain by calling into the show and just telling me these stories. It is my impression they come from a very sincere and real place. And I've heard multiple cases over the years. And I believe it's true. And it does affect me. But these stories affect me. These types of stories affect me in a positive way.
All right. You've got to tell me about this man in the brown suit. You received this call from Gail in Oregon. And she tells you about this mysterious man in a brown suit.
Yeah, well, actually, this is a great bookend to that last story. Actually, Gail lived in New Jersey. I'm guessing that Gail's probably in her 60s when she called me. This is just recently. And she told a story of decades ago. She was a teenager. Her and her six-year-old brother were riding her bike, and he was riding on the back fender. I'm kind of picturing like a Leave It to Beaver neighborhood and like this old-school Schwinn bike with the chrome fenders. That's kind of what I have in my mind. So anyway, her brother's leg gets caught in the back spokes, his ankle, and he's screaming, and the bike goes down. They both go down. She can see her house, but there are no cars passing by, nobody to help. She's screaming for help. He's screaming for help. They're both on the ground, and she looks up, and she suddenly sees this grandfatherly-looking gentleman in a brown suit, like they used to wear back in the 30s or 40s. He had a brown fedora on, brown fedora hat. He looks down and he says, do you need help? And Gail says, yes. And she says the weird thing is she doesn't remember him actively pulling her brother out of the bicycle, but all of a sudden her brother is up and around, his ankle's out of the spokes, and he's standing up. And she gets up and dusts herself off, and she looks around immediately to thank the man. And he's gone. So that's kind of weird, but, you know, maybe he just got out of there. Now, she said that it was a really open area, and she could see 360 degrees, and you have to be a fast runner to get out of the line of sight. But, you know, weird things happen. Fast forward 40 years. Gail is now in Oregon, as you said. She's a caretaker for her elderly mother who had had a brain injury. So anyway, she's coming home with her mother from a doctor's appointment or a store or something, and they're in a two-door SUV-style car, and the mother gets her clothes stuck on something in the back seat and can't get out. And as often happens with people with brain injuries and things, unfortunately, maybe they're a little quicker to anger, those kind of things. The older woman becomes exasperated and a little bit combative, and she panicked because she couldn't get out of the car. Things are ramping up. Gail is screaming for her father to come outside to help. He doesn't hear. Her mom is getting more upset by the minute. Gail doesn't know what to do. She looks outside the car, and she sees a familiar face. It's that same man in the brown suit, the elderly man. The exact same person she'd seen 40-plus years earlier, but absolutely unchanged, same hat, same suit, same look, no older. He asked her, "Do you need my help?" Same scenario. She says yes, but she doesn't remember him directly helping her mom, but suddenly her mom is out of the car and just fine. She looks to thank the man, and Richard, yes, you guessed it. The man in the brown suit, well, he was gone. So you tell me, was that an angel?
I don't know, but he needs to buy a new suit. 40 years, same suit. But in all seriousness, you're hearing these people's voices as they're telling you this. Describe, their emotional state.
Well, with Gail, it was kind of incredulous. Like, in other words, Alan, the story about the tractor trailer and the angel and the white semi, he was kind of all in. He's like, it's an angel. Gail's kind of like, I think it might have been an angel, but, there's no explanation. She was kind of like, you could tell she was very sincere, and she was an older woman. I don't think for a second she was making this up. But she's kind of like, what the heck? You could tell that that she puzzled over this for years. So there's a level of sincerity there. And again, as I've said, I've had multiple cases over the years where people have talked about mysterious figures coming to their rescue. It doesn't surprise me anymore. I think it's real.
But you obviously, I'm guessing over the years you have developed what we call the old BS meter. Sometimes there are callers that are not necessarily so sincere.
Yeah, I think mainly I do think, and I'm kind of biased because I love my audience, and I think, for the most part, they're very sincere. I think there can be cases where people assign a supernatural explanation to something where it's probably bad electrical or a leaky pipe or a breeze in the wind. I think those things certainly happen. And I've had maybe a time or two, literally over the last 11 years I've done Campfire, where I've not aired a call because I thought somebody was trying to, do a Howard Stern or something and try to get some kind of code phrase on the air or do a joke or something. But for the most part, I really believe that the vast majority of people are sincere. Does that mean every single caller and every single story is representative of something supernatural? Probably not. But I think there's a good percentage that is. But yeah, sure. There's some people who tell tall tales about going fishing. And I think the same is obviously it's the same way in the supernatural world, too.
We've just got a few minutes here, but I think we might be able to squeeze in the story about this house with a terrifying secret from
okay.
Madge.
Yeah, now we're getting on the other end of it. It's a little long, so we may not make it, but we'll try. Madge was a college student, and this was back in the 80s. And she had answered, and this is, she's from Colorado, but I believe this happened in Seattle. And she had answered an ad to rent a room in an older home. And she said the place was okay, but it gave her a little bit of an odd feeling. The side door had a big bar across it and multiple deadlocks. In the basement, there was a common area and a room. One of the rooms for rent. One of the rooms for rent was in the basement. One was upstairs. And she noticed someone had fashioned homemade bars across the windows, like it was hastily done. So she's like, I don't know about this place, but I'm a college student and I need a place to stay. So she took the room in the basement. There were three other people who lived there. Now, the first night she was sleeping there, Richard, was in this basement room, and she said she had the worst nightmare of her life. The dream took place in the basement room, and there was an incredibly evil presence on the other side of her door. And in the dream, she was fighting for her life to keep that entity out of the room. And it struck her so much, the next day she actually went to the hardware store, and, you didn't have Amazon back then, and bought a lock and put it on the door because it really it was going to stop her from sleeping. And throughout that summer, she would wake up in the middle of night and feel like someone was watching her. But she chalked it up to this strange dream. Now, a couple weeks after she moved in, another woman moved in named Val, very bubbly personality who was moved to Seattle to get into broadcast journalism. And a couple weeks after she moves in, Val wakes Madge in the middle of the night. She says, "Some guy followed me into the house, and I think he's hiding somewhere." And everybody...
Let me just jump, Jim. I'm going to jump in there. We're going to pick this up on the other side. Madge and the house with a very... very terrifying secret on Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie, welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. S-Y because I love you, R-E-double-T. A Calgary man visiting family in British Columbia may have spotted Canada's version of the Loch Ness Monster known as Ogopogo. The potential sighting reportedly occurred last weekend when Adam Schwartz was celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving with loved ones in the city of West Kelowna. He was walking along the shore of Okanagan Lake, where the legendary creature is supposed to reside, and he noted something peculiar about the otherwise calm water. And you can read the rest of the story and check out the video in the highlight carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with the Prince of the Paranormal podcast, Jim Harold, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Jim Harold, the host of Jim Harold's Campfire, the Paranormal podcast, the author of five volumes and counting of true ghost stories, Jim Harold's Campfire. And we were, before the break, we were talking about one of these, of your top 20 campfire calls or stories of 2020, Madge. Was living in this house, and she was getting a very ominous feeling while she was there. And was it a roommate that she took on that came over to the house, or a visitor, and had kind of an ominous feeling as well?
Well, it was one of the housemates. The housemate Val lived in another room, and she woke Madge up in the middle of the night, and she says, "You've got to come. Some guy followed me into the house. I was looking out my window, and he came on the roof, and he was speaking with me, and he came in, and I think he's hiding somewhere in the house." And everybody got up. The roommates got up and looked around the house, and they couldn't find anything. And this started a series of events that Val had, where she would claim she was seeing this man in the house and so forth. And Madge thought, you know, Val seems like a sweet person, but she has issues. Even so much to the point that she said, maybe Val, you ought to see somebody about seeing these things. And Val told her, "You don't understand, you don't see what I see." She was absolutely steadfast that there was a man in the house. So anyway, this is during the summer, and towards the end of that summer, the older lady who owned the place told the tenants that she sold out and that they'll have to leave. And actually, Mad said it was kind of a relief because the place just gave her a weird vibe. So anyway, the last day Madge was there, she's reading her newspaper, and Val, the housemate, comes again and says she has to come with her, that there's a terrible man in the backyard, and that he's hiding behind the tree in our back alley. Well, Madge was thinking, she says, "I don't remember a tree in that backyard. I haven't spent a lot of time here, but I don't remember that." She goes to the backyard. There's no man and there's no tree, but there is the stump of a tree where a tree had once been. So anyway, she just chalked it up to more strangeness with Val. She went to turn her key into the landlady who lived a couple of blocks over, the woman who sold the house. And the woman said, made an odd comment. She said, "You know, I'll be glad to get rid of this place, given its history." And Madge said, "Excuse me, what history?" And the woman said, "Oh, yes, one of the women that Ted Bundy killed lived in your room."
Oh, dear Lord.
Yes. And the police at the time when this happened didn't know it was Ted Bundy, but believed that the man had hid behind a tree that was once in the backyard, which was subsequently cut down because they were afraid this man would come back, and that Bundy entered the house via the door that Madge had the dream about. She said that this shook her to the core. It lined up with all of Val's visions, her dreams, her proclamations the man was there. But here's the weird thing, Richard. That's weird enough. But this happened in the 80s. Ted Bundy was in jail, but he was still alive. So
that's right.
In essence, maybe Val was seeing some kind of replay or something, and Madge went and did the research and verified this all happened with this house. It was not made up. And it was interesting, as I told the caller, I've had Lloyd Auerbach, the great parapsychologist, on the show, and I know he's been on Coast many times. And he told me a story about Casey had investigated, and I'm assuming it's not this case, but there had been a murder, and people would claim to see that murder being carried out after the fact. But the victim, obviously, was dead, but the murderer was still alive and in jail. But they were seeing a replay of it. It wasn't like it was a ghost, because he was still alive. And this gets back to what we talked about in the intro of this show, Richard. One thing that doing these programs makes me think is there's a lot of things we really don't understand. And there's things that are going on that we haven't really conceptualized. I don't know what it is.
Right.
Don't ask me for any answers. I have a lot of questions. But that's why I think that what's going on is even beyond the scope of our thinking sometimes.
I'm trying to figure out whether the fact that she's seeing a replay and not the ghost of Ted Bundy, does that make the story less or more scary in your mind?
I think it almost makes it more scary, because that energy, he was still alive and that negative energy was still that powerful and floating around. And to think she stayed all that, right. I mean, that, you know, technically that should have been disclosed. You know, I think now it's those types of things need to be disclosed in real estate transactions. She should have been told, hey, you know, somebody that was murdered by Ted Bundy lived here, you know, and there were some horrible things that happened. You know, I think that she should have known that.
No, I believe that is a part of real estate law now, if I'm not mistaken. What scares you? Is there one sort of category, one thing, one paranormal type activity that just really scares you?
Something I would not want to see. And I hear more and more cases of this. People call in talking about shadow figures and the hat man. And we talked about the man in the brown suit with the fedora, but this is a different kind of man with a fedora. And people report seeing the shadow figure that is darker than dark. It's like a hole cut in the universe, and they'll wake up and they'll see it. And it's always wearing, many times wearing, a fedora-style hat. And I've had multiple people call in. I've even had people call in. I've had someone call in maybe a month or two ago, told me the story, and I said, oh, you saw the hat man. And she's like, well, he had a hat on. What's the hat man? Didn't even know of that kind of, I guess you would call it, paranormal cliche of the hat man. Didn't even know it existed. And I said, oh, by the way, thousands of people have reported the same thing you just said. And now that is, Richard, something I would not want to wake up to see. Now, what it is, I don't know, but I don't want any part of it.
Right, right. I think for me, it would be these black-eyed children we hear so much about.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. In fact, I just had a call. It hasn't even aired on the show yet, of a woman in Philadelphia who saw one. She was in her car. She was staying overnight with her boyfriend, and I think it was a couple miles down the road, and she saw this like millipede scurry across the floor, and she says, I'm not staying here tonight. Take me home. And it kind of turned out to be a harbinger, because they were walking, and she said there was this young kid, teenage kid, and he wasn't, it was Philadelphia, and Philadelphia gets cold in the winter. And he had a T-shirt on. He wasn't dressed properly, but he didn't look cold. He looked very pale, and he was looking at her and strangely licking his lips like he was hungry, and looked up at her and had totally dark eyeballs, black eyeballs.
Yikes.
And it's like, that's when I put on my Air Jordans, Richard. I can't run very fast, but I see how fast I could run.
Seriously. Speaking of harbingers, tell me about Lucy in the UK and her harbinger of doom.
This is one of the saddest and scariest stories we've ever had on the show. Lucy was in the UK, and I think it was 2003, and she was traveling back home to the Midlands by car from London to go back. I think she had been working in London and was going to go back and do some more studies. And they were on the motorway, as they call it over there, and they were going back home, and they had a trailer behind their car with all of Lucy's belongings. And as they're traveling, they're in the slow lane, and in the fast lane, a car with a strange woman pulls up beside them and kind of levels out so they're even with them, and the woman looks over at her, and she just stares and has this weird, weird expression and keeps staring at her. It makes her feel very uncomfortable. The woman has this kind of round face and red hair, just very striking. And then the car is like this strange, sparkling, greenish color car. And her dad, who's driving, asks her, Lucy, do you know this woman? And she says, no, I don't know her. And then eventually that car pulls away. And they get to talking. It's like, maybe something's wrong with our trailer. Maybe she saw something and was trying to get our attention. Maybe we ought to pull over and make sure that everything's nice and secure. So they get out. They inspect everything. Everything's fine. Lucy gets back in the car, but her dad doesn't make it. As he's trying to get back in the car, he's hit by a truck. He's thrown.
Oh, dear.
And he dies at the scene. And Lucy just, you know, as would be a normal reaction, can barely remember anything after that point and so forth. And she said for weeks she couldn't sleep. She felt oppressed. She felt this dark energy and things. And the story ends, I guess, with a little happier note. But the thing is that she wonders if that was something either a harbinger of doom or a banshee, or I had brought up the idea that maybe this thing was almost beckoning and almost caused this to happen, because she said they wouldn't have stopped had this woman not had this strange expression on her face. So it directly led to her father's death. And then a couple of weeks later, her brother had been in Australia, and it took him time to get back home. And they went to the place where her father lived. He had gotten a place, and the brother had never even seen it. And they were going in, and I think the brother was down the hall, and she was near the door. And she looks at the door, and who's standing there but her father, the figure of her father. She said her father was looking at her brother, looking past her, just with the biggest smile on his face. And she looked at the brother, looked back, and he was gone. And she said, you know, that brought some closure, and I think that made her feel a little bit better. But that is so frightening, that this figure riding on this road, you know, do we get those signs, you know, or do some people get led into their death by something sinister? I don't know, but that is just such a weird story. You know, it's sad enough what happened, but you add that woman, the strange woman in the car, and I really don't know what that means.
Right, right. You mentioned the father's ghost, and we talked about the Ted Bundy story, where he was actually still alive at the time when someone thought they saw him. Well, he would be languishing on death row. But so, have you arrived at any conclusions, or even, I don't know, solid speculation about what ghosts really are, what's happening here?
Well, I don't know if it's solid or not, and certainly these aren't original thoughts, but I think I'm going to take the ultimate cop-out and say it could be all of the above. I mean, I do believe that our loved ones live on, and I believe that they can get messages to us. Now, sometimes I think they're in the form of signs, and I've personally had those experiences. In others, maybe it's a little more blatant. Maybe it's like Lucy, who saw her father in full body. So I think that is part of it. A part of it I do think is a residual thing. Sometimes I even wonder, you know, if you see a, quote, ghost, but it doesn't mean anything to you, there's no personal connection, could it be some kind of time slip? Or could it be, you know, I think of, what if we're in a multiverse and we're like tracks on a record, if anybody remembers those, LP, and we're side by side and sometimes those two cross. So I kind of think it's all of the above. I don't think it's just one thing. I will say that. I think it could be multiple things. Some of that is loved ones trying to get in touch. Some of it are kind of glitches in the universe. I don't know, but that's kind of the very vague conclusion I've come to over the years.
You mentioned time slips, and we'll talk about a very unusual, well, all time slips are unusual. There's no such thing as a garden variety time slip, but this one involves a dinosaur, and we'll save that one for the next hour. We're approaching the top of the hour. But I just wondered, after 15 years delving in this, you know, this arena of high strangeness, how has it changed your sort of your worldview? I mean, is there one particular area that you now have become, I don't know, not obsessed with it, but you've really started to drill down and research it, maybe even for your own edification?
Well, the thing that I often say in my shows, we're not all going to see a UFO. We're not all going to see Bigfoot. We're not all going to see a ghost. We cover all that stuff on the shows. But one thing that everybody who hears your voice or hears my voice, including us, we're all going to die. And I think the afterlife, to me, is the ultimate question. And as, you know, I recently, not that long ago, hit the mid-century mark. And when you get to be this age, you start looking at your own mortality, your loved ones, you know, the moms, the dads. Luckily, my dad's still alive, but the parents and the aunts and the uncles, you look up and they're all gone. And you like to think that they're still around. And I'm more convinced than ever that they are and that life does go on. Now, what form does that take? I don't know. I mean, I grew up in the Christian faith, and I tend to adhere to that in general. But then I think about things like reincarnation, and there's some very compelling evidence for reincarnation. So is it some mixture? You know, I don't know, but I'm more convinced than ever that the afterlife is a thing. It's real. It's not just a story we tell ourselves to make us feel better. I think it's real. I mean, you look at the work of Ian Stevenson, Jim B. Tucker at the University of Virginia on reincarnation, the work of Sam Parnia on near-death experiences. I think there's good reason to believe that there's survival beyond here. And I think it's the ultimate question, and one that, whether we admit it or not, I think we all want a solid answer to. Don't know if we're going to get it.
Well, we'll try in the next hour. Let's come back, and we'll get you to tell us some more campfire stories, the top 20 campfire stories from Jim Harold. I don't know if we'll get to all of them, but we'll try. Back with more on Coast to Coast. Stay with us.